You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
We're going to be slightly truncated today, Friday afternoon. I know you probably want to hear the second round of our in-depth discussion of family ties, but we have no time for that. Both of us have places to be.
How would Alex P. Keaton vote for Trump? That's the question.
Tune in next week to find out, because we have a debate to discuss. So
that's the debate to have, Bill, but okay.
Now, you wrote beforehand that, you know, Biden was in the hot spot, couldn't have a second debate where his age would be called into question, knocked on his heels by the progressive faction of the party. Did Biden survive the second debate?
Yeah, I think he survived. If this were not to go back to the TV show analogy, but this is what you would want to script if you wanted to script a series, which is to say none of the main characters got killed off. I think Joe Biden answered the age question. He has the energy. He's not slow and doddering, but he may still be out of touch in a party where Barack Obama's too right wing for the party. So to be continued.
You know, I wrote a piece before the debate about how the fiercest debate in the party is Barack Obama, which I don't believe that many people read, but now we're getting a burst of commentary about that after the debate. So
you were too early. Too far ahead of the curve. Yeah.
Always the danger. But in that piece, I argued that not only is it crazy to abandon a popular two-term president in your party, you know, for short-term purposes, there's a danger in how it's going to affect your ability to prosecute your legislative case in the future. You want to be embedded in the national fabric that Barack Obama raised taxes on the wealthy, had a huge influx of social spending, you know, had real regulations on private industry, and the economy grew, and jobs were created, and we got us out of the Great Recession onto the longest running recovery in history. Like, you can make that argument even if you want to argue for single payer, or you want to say Obama was too nice to Republicans, or whatever. You know, you still want to lead. You want all Democrats to lead with the Obama was amazing argument, because how do you argue for a maximalist progressive agenda if you can't first argue, you know what, you can increase government and not blow up the economy? Because you know Trump's going to go out there and say, I cut taxes and I cut regulations, and that's why the economy is doing so great. Well, you got to counter that. And if you're going to be beating up on Obama now, it's going to be hard to make that case later.
Bill, let me just say, what you're doing right now, it's a Republican talking point. And I don't think we need to be here, Bill. Donald Trump's in the way. I don't think we need to be here spouting those Republican talking points, Bill.
And so even though Biden was getting pushed by folks who were making implicit criticisms of the Obama record, Biden appears to me to be in very good shape owning the Obama space. Whereas I think, and I understand there's trickiness in trying to get a piece of Obama for yourself while Biden's around. But I don't think you want to see the entire legacy to Biden. It's a very popular legacy. A lot of supporters of the Democratic Party. You want to make sure that he doesn't have sole ownership of that, and they're letting him have it.
Yeah. What you're saying sounds perfectly logical and rational, but I have to tell you, in the debate, there's like one guy making that argument, sort of, which is Joe Biden. And everybody else has an incentive to go after Joe Biden. And I have to tell you, the audiences in these debate halls, really, listen to the applause. If Joe Biden says something commonsensical, is that a word? If Joe Biden says something like you just said, there'll be tepid applause. If Julian Castro or whoever says something radical, they'll get tremendous applause. And I'm not suggesting that's indicative of the electorate, but I think it gets in the heads of the candidates, and I think it impacts the perception, ultimately, of the electorate who's watching on TV.
Well, there is an argument that you want to get in good with the engaged activist voters because so many people are not engaged right now, and the engaged activists will have a lot of influence going forward. So you don't want to look at the polling today as being sacrosanct. But I think that wrongly assumes that the non-engaged voter is going to be so easily swayed by the most left-wing activists of the Democratic electorate. And I would push back a little bit on what you said there. I think it's very notable that in both debates, you had very robust discussions about health care, a pretty big divide that was articulated between single payer and public option, which, grant you, are both fairly liberal positions. But the public option folks are being articulated by the more moderate candidates. And those who were making critical arguments about single payer were not booed. They weren't chased out of the room. They had their fans in the hall as well. So I think if you're watching at home, you're saying to yourself, you know what? This is a diverse party on this subject. And even though, you know, Delaney and such, you know, got a lot of guffawing from folks who are like, who is it? Why is he turning to this guy? He's at 1%. Why does he even get time on the stage at all? I think that helped till the soil for Biden. I mean, it makes Biden not seem like he's totally out there by himself, and gives him more running room.
Well, I have to say, first, I was impressed by Delaney, who used to represent my home district. Roscoe Bartlett will always be my congressman, of course, but I thought Delaney was much sharper and quicker and smarter than I would have thought. He's on the wrong side of an issue of the Democratic Party, of course, but very sharp. I do want to just take a second to, pat myself on the back. It was a pretty good night for, you know, Tulsi and Andrew Yang, two candidates that, you know, this may be their last debate. I'm not sure, but
Yang will probably get in the next one.
Well,
Yang is one poll short right now, so he has time to pick up that one last poll. He has the donors, and he has three other polls where he's at 2%. So he'll probably get there. Tulsi is less confident about that.
Well, Andrew Yang had a great debate, and I just on my latest podcast on Matt Lewis in the News, I posted an interview I did with him a couple months ago as my latest podcast. So if you've just learned who Andrew Yang is and you're curious, check out that podcast. I do want to say Tulsi destroyed Kamala Harris. I mean, that was right out of the Chris Christie knifing Marco Rubio playbook.
Right at the verge of Christie's going to get bumped out himself. He takes one person down with him. Now,
it was a murder suicide, as I called it on CNN at the time.
Now, I don't think this is the end of Kamala's campaign, but she could have really used a 1-2 debate punch, you know, a consistent performance in both debates to really establish herself as a main Biden alternative. And she did not get that, in large part because of Tulsi. And we've talked about this before. I mean, if only Tulsi wasn't an Assad sympathizer, she'd be a very strong candidate. But she is an Assad sympathizer, and so she's not. But she used her time well. And I don't know what her animus is against Kamala. She'd been taking shots at Kamala after the first debate, saying she was too mean towards Biden. So I don't know what that backstory is. But it has not helped Kamala's case. And, you know, there's been commentary that, you know, yeah, Biden was better than the last debate, but he still seemed not on his A game. He still meandered, or he was groping for words, or he misstated a number here, a number there. So
his text, Joe 3303,
yeah,
or whatever.
He botched the closing. I don't think any of that, you know, it's enough to prevent him from totally running away with it. But I think what he needed was to arrest the notion that he was, you know, not up to it at all.
He did that.
Which he did. He was much more prepared and defiant and strong when attacked. I mean, I don't think every counterpunch landed, but I don't think that matters. If he can hold on, I mean, he regained what he lost in the polls before the debate. He fully regained it in the Real Clear Politics polling average. He was 32 before, 32 after, and just holding at that level in a, even if it narrows to a 4-person race, that's a pretty good place to be. And I would imagine if, as the race narrows, he wouldn't stay there. He'd probably add at least a few more points.
what Tulsi did to Kamala is equally as important, because it's not just about Joe holding, but it's about keeping other people from gaining momentum. So Kamala's momentum stopped. Joe Biden, I think he rose to the occasion and answered the age question. I think he is sharp. I think that's as good as Joe Biden gets. I don't think Joe Biden gets better than that. Not when there's 10 other people on the stage attacking him. Not when he's on the wrong side of the zeitgeist. That's as good as it gets for Joe Biden. And I think it was, I don't think he could do much more than that.
I've heard some people say, you know, if he wasn't for VP, if you just saw them all without knowing any of their backgrounds, like, he would not be the strongest person on the stage. You would not assume he was the front runner. And like, to me, that alternative timeline doesn't exist. I mean, he gets more steps. The refs allow him more steps to the hoop because he has been a two-term vice president, because he's had 40 years in the Senate. Now, 36 years. You may say, there's downsides to that, of course. Now, there's targets of opportunity for attacks, but you don't have the same feeling of, I don't think he can be commander in chief, because you know he's been close to the seat of power before and he handled the job well. So he gets that latitude, fairly or unfairly.
You know what I wonder about is the lack of respect and deference. Like, I don't think I have it in me to be one of these political candidates, because Joe Biden was the vice president. And if you're, you know, Castro or, you know, some of these other candidates who interacted with him in that capacity where he was the vice president of the United States, and you were sort of an underling, maybe like a member of Congress or a cabinet member, but not Secretary of State or something, you would have a certain deference. And then to go on stage and to attack somebody so viciously, I just don't think I have it in me to do that. You have to be pretty cutthroat to do that to someone that you know. I mean, we know about Kamala going after Joe Biden last time, despite the fact that they had some sort of a friendship and personal. This is a guy who, like, goes out and campaigns for people, and then they knife him. I don't know. It seems a little, maybe this is just politics. I mean, maybe I'm naive.
I mean, Kamala, I think, did what she had to do in the first debate. She was really fading into the woodwork, and that catapulted her back into a clearly top tier. But she was starting to fade again in the weeks before the second debate. She had lost half of what she had gained, and she's probably not going to gain much, if anything, after this debate. As much as I think she did what she had to do, there was downside cost to it. There is now a narrative of her being disrespectful, being needlessly vicious, being opportunistic. And look, plenty of people in politics are vicious and opportunistic. I'm not saying this makes her a bad person in politics. I'm just saying I think that was a necessary but complicated maneuver that she took, and she hasn't figured out how to follow that up with something else to build on the gain that she had made. And since she didn't figure it out by the time of this debate, and I think the healthcare proposal she put out, which got some plaudits, I'm not saying it was like a total bust, I don't know if quite qualifies as finding the sweet spot that unifies the entire party, because she's getting hit on it from both sides still. So she has work to do, as does, you know, Bernie and Warren, who I think had fine debates in the this week. Arguably Warren a little better than Bernie, but I don't think anything happened there that really made up someone who was on the fence between the two clearly pick one over the other and separate the two of them in the polls. We'll see if polling bears out something different, but that's my personal sense.
That's interesting, because I think you're going a little bit against conventional wisdom, which is to say that Warren is continuing to put distance between herself and Bernie and overtake him, as it were.
I mean, that hasn't happened yet in polls. They've been clustered together. You can look at individual polls where there's distance, but the average, they're clustered together. We'll see in the next week or so if the debates change that. There's so little changing in polls after debates, generally speaking. We saw a big change with Kamala and Biden because there was such a dramatic moment. I think like a marginally better debate isn't going to produce a lot of poll movement. That's my gut sense. But we'll see. Now, the next debate, presumably, we don't know for a fact yet, but it will definitely be narrowed. I'm not sure if we know it's going to be over one or two nights again, even though it will be a smaller field.
Can we get rid of Kirsten Gillibrand?
Probably.
Okay. That's all I care about. By the way, that attack, her attack on Joe Biden, I haven't had time to fully delve into this, but am I correct that that attack on Joe Biden being like a sexist or whatever was misread by Gillibrand?
Well, I don't think it did what she wanted. She didn't get a Kamala moment. She didn't, I think, rescue her whole campaign over it. You can make an argument that even though Biden said this is just to deny child care tax credit to relatively wealthier families, and even though he didn't make the case in explicitly gendered terms, that would be the net result of his action, that people who were, you know, upper middle class, upper class, you're telling them that you have a moral obligation to stay at home and not work outside the workforce because you have your families to take care of. For most people, it's going to be women. Even Biden didn't say it explicitly, so he should own that. I mean, that's the Gillibrand case. And the Biden case is that I specifically said, I don't care if it's the man or woman who's working at, who's the single family earner. And I just don't think that someone of less means should fund the second income of a wealthier family.
All of Biden's, it seems like many of Biden's sins are very defensible if you're allowed to defend them. But they're also, if they're framed from a sort of less than generous progressive standpoint, they seem like, oh my gosh, Biden said that women's place is in the home, that they shouldn't, you know, like, it's not what he said. And he has arguments for busing and all the other stuff too, but that takes nuance, and we don't have much time.
I mean, folks like you, Matt, who have been saying the Democratic Party is gone ultra woke and it's cancel culture all the time and they've gone, you know, off the deep end, all the evidence here is that all those types of arguments have been thrown at Biden, and he is still the front runner. Maybe not overwhelming front runner, but the front runner. And just to tie back to what I was going to say about Warren, you know, it will be a big show when Warren and Biden are on the same stage. You know, that clash hasn't happened yet, and Warren may bring up things that haven't been brought up before. But after trying to hit Biden for essentially being a racist or being a handmaiden to racism or a handmaiden to sexism, to then say you were on the wrong side of the 2005 bankruptcy bill, I don't think it's going to have a lot of punch. So, I mean, Warren might come with more ammo than that. That's just what's been telegraphed, you know, for years. But I'm not sure what you can do to... people have been waiting on the left for the wheels to come off of Biden's campaign. If this hasn't done it, and Biden has in the process solidified a loyalty with the older, more moderate Democrats, that might prove unshakable. You know, one more gaffe after all the gaffes of history may not cut it. You know, it's going to be something really,
really
dramatic.
The good news for Biden is that he's probably pretty gaffe proof. I just don't know if. So I'm not saying it's going to be a gaffe. I just don't know if he can sustain a year of, well, 6 months of this, of the perpetual attacks and playing defense. Anyway, we'll see if he does. And if he does, congrats and good news for the Dems. And we all better hope he wins. Because if Biden is the nominee and loses, then the next time around, the left will,
they would be supercharged at that point. But I will say, this will be the last word because I have to jump. I think Biden has really doubled down on being a moderate pragmatist, more so being an above the fray candidate, which looks to me like a smart play for the nomination. Yeah. He can, if he holds on to a sizable plurality that gets him through the early contest into South Carolina, he wins South Carolina on the with the help of the African-American vote. He's pretty golden for Super Tuesday. But there is a downside cost to that in that it might be harder for him to unify the party when it's all over. If he can win it quickly, maybe it gives him some time to mend fences. But there is an imperfection having to win the race the way he has been forced to wage it.
Indeed. All right. So as you mentioned, a brief, short but sweet show. I'm out next week, and then we'll reconvene when things heat up.
All right.
And we head into when, you know, when the score can really change, Bill.
Okay. Till then, Matt, have a good vacay.
All right. Thanks, man.
Bye.
Before you go, a quick message from the suits at Blogging Heads TV. Blogging Heads will always be free for you to watch and listen to, and we don't even go the NPR route of guilting you into donating during Pledge Week. But we do have a small request. If you enjoy Blogging Heads programming, rate and review us on iTunes. The iTunes algorithm weighs positive reviews heavily, so taking a few minutes to rate and review us will help more people find out about our shows. Also, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Thank you.